acne and body odor, growth spurts, sexuality, and all the parts of puberty. When it comes to teens and tweens, when it comes to puberty, where do you turn?
Puberty starts like 2 to 3 years earlier than it used to, and people aren't prepared. They wonder, why is my 9-year-old acting like a teenager, or why does my 8-year-old have breast buds?
Half of all girls enter puberty between 8 and 9, and boys enter puberty between 9 and 10, which means half have already done it before then. And frankly, there's a lot of misconception of who's still in it. A lot of parents think it goes from 11 to 14, wham, bam, done, and I don't have to think about it once they're in high school. And no, it is stretching like taffy. It extends all the way through high school for most kids, well into post-high school for many kids. So what is puberty?
Is your child's challenging behavior leaving you feeling exhausted, defeated, and hopeless? You are not alone. And I want you to know you are not a failure and your child is not broken. Welcome to Calm the Chaos Parenting, the podcast for parents raising strong-willed, highly sensitive, or neurodivergent children. I'm Dana Abraham, parenting expert, and I have helped hundreds of thousands of families just like yours. Each week, I'll share simple science-backed solutions to help you feel more grounded, in tune, and deeply connected to your child, no matter what challenge you face. Start your journey from surviving to thriving as a family at calmthechaospodcast.com.
Hey, 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 and welcome back to the Calm the Chaos Parenting Podcast. Oh my goodness, today's topic is about acne and body odor, growth spurts, sexuality, and can I list anything else? But it's all the parts of puberty. And I think there's a part of me inside that just gets a little like awkward just saying that word. So as much as we try to pretend that we will never have to have those talks with our kids, eventually there comes a day when it is an absolute must. So how do we make these conversations not so, well, awkward? Well, you are going to love our guest today because they are talking about that very topic, how to make puberty a topic we talk about and it's not so awkward. Welcome, Cara and Vanessa. I'm so excited to have you guys here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We were just giggling right before we got on because right before this, I was in my kitchen and I had the book and I'm going through and pinning things. And I sat down next to my daughter, who's 11, and we have very open talks about periods and about her developing body and about things like that. And so it never feels that awkward talking to her. Now, my boys, it's a different story. So I said, you got any questions about puberty? I'm about to go on a podcast. And she goes, no, mom, like in the most annoyed voice ever. So my husband comes in. I'm like, you got any questions on puberty? And then my 16-year-old boy comes in and I'm like, hey, buddy, nice to see you. You feeling better? Got any questions on puberty? And he was like, yeah, you're a few years too late on that. And I was like, oh, I'm sure we could still have some great conversations. And so I keep talking, just talking. And I to the buttony chapter about the acne and the backne and the chestne and the buttony. And I am just in my own world, just like talking about fun puberty words. And I look around and no one else is in the kitchen. And our babysitter or house manager, whatever amazing word you want to call her, looks over and she goes, did you just clear the room talking about puberty? I said, I think I did.
Okay, that's excellent.
Now you know what to do if you ever need alone time, Dana. You're just like, exactly. Buttony, and they all go running for the hills.
It's your safe word.
Yeah. I was like, we could talk about boobs or buttony. And they were like, mom, why do you have to be so weird?
Dana, that's so funny because we're in the middle of launching a curriculum about health and sex education. And I was building a slide deck just the other day. And my 18-year-old came upstairs to ask me a question and looked at the slide on my screen. And it was the menstrual cup and all the facts you needed to know about the menstrual cup. And he just looked at me and said, that's awkward.
It's so good. I think when I was interviewing with you guys for the book, when my book came out, I had just had a lovely conversation with my son about sex. And he was like, mom, don't ever tell people that this is what you're good at talking about because you're doing a terrible job.
You're like, that's why I have Car and Vanessa on the podcast, so they can do this part.
Exactly. So why don't you share, for people who haven't seen your work yet, don't know who you are, can you share a little bit about each of yourselves, who you are, and what you do?
Cara, you want to start?
Sure. So I'm Cara. I am a pediatrician and flipped from being a practicing pediatrician to writing about all sorts of pediatric topics about 15, 16 years ago. And I've written a bunch of parenting books. And then I ended up falling into the American Girl Care and Keeping of You book line. And I had the complete privilege of updating the original Care and Keeping of You and writing 4 more books in that series. And then I found Vanessa, my soul sister in the puberty world. Vanessa and I have a company called Order of Magnitude, where we flip puberty positive. We make everything less awkward. We have products that make the physical shifts of puberty feel better, but we have so many content streams, from social media to our own podcast to a book that we wrote and put out last fall to now a curriculum and soon a parent portal. We do puberty from every perspective possible. And I love my job, and I bring a little bit of shame to my children, but I still love my job, Dana. That's me.
I love it so much. I love everything that you guys put out into the world. I was telling you just before we got on that on your social, and if you guys are listening to this and not following them on social, we'll put the links below. You have to. They put out some great content, but they also put out some really fun content that the 12-year-old boy in me just absolutely loves. And it's these like animated pimples and animated tampons. And it's just like, what is coming across my, oh, okay. It's just Cara and Vanessa again.
You're like, what is happening? Oh, right. It's just spilling the puberty. So I come at this work actually from a very different place from Cara. I'm not a pediatrician, although I play one on TV. Just kidding. I started working on puberty actually from the girls' sports world. For a decade, I ran a company called Dynamo Girl, which used sports to build girls' self-esteem, which, Dana, as you well know, this is a big issue for all of us. And very quickly, we realized the girls in our program were in puberty years earlier than we expected them to. And this is really the premise of our book, This Is So Awkward, is that puberty starts like 2 to 3 years earlier than it used to. And people aren't prepared for that. And they wonder, why is my 9-year-old acting like a teenager? Or why does my 8-year-old have breast buds? And so I started running puberty workshops in New York and LA. And that's how I met Cara, but our whole goal is to talk about the stuff that everybody is kind of uncomfortable talking about. But really, we know that if you are in conversation with kids about it, it helps keep them safer and it helps their self-esteem. So that's why we do the unenviable job of having all the conversations that no one else wants to have.
But you do... You've got me envious. My 12-year-old self is very envious that you get to talk about butts and boobs and farts all day. That is pretty fun to me.
It's pretty amazing. It is pretty fun. Yes.
I'm kind of showing my true colors here. So I'll try to keep it. This is like the one episode where I get to talk about whatever
you can say whatever you want.
Whatever I want. But I might clear the room like I did.
That's okay. We'll stay, Dana.
Oh, good. I'm so glad. Like you said, you've got this amazing book that came out. You've got lots of things, but I absolutely love this one. I recommend it at least once a day, if not once a week, but more often than that. I'm constantly telling people, you need to go and get this book right here, and you need to follow the two of you, because when it comes to teens and tweens, when it comes to puberty, where do you turn? What is the information? You definitely don't want to go Googling a bunch of information. Mm-hmm. And we definitely don't want our kids Googling the information, mm-hmm. because they're going to end up in the wrong place for sure. And so I wanted to have you on today because I have a lot of questions, and you have got so much great information in the book. And what I especially love is how you talk about how to talk about it, not just the science behind it and how things have changed, but you also talk about how to have that connection with our kids and how to really help our kids feel comfortable talking about this as best as we can. There's still going to be some of that awkwardness, but that's what I love. So I think the first question I have is, you talk about this quite a bit and you already touched on one of them, but what are some of the biggest misconceptions around puberty that hold parents back or educators or even the kids back from getting the knowledge they need?
Yeah, the biggest is when it's happening. So Vanessa mentioned that it's happening earlier than it used to. The average age, so half of all girls enter puberty between 8 and 9 and boys enter puberty between 9 and 10, which means half have already done it before then and half will come to it much or somewhat or much later. But so there's who's in the beginning of it. And then frankly, there's a lot of misconception of who's still in it. A lot of parents think it goes from 11 to 14, wham, bam, done. And I don't have to think about it once they're in high school. And it's no. It is stretching like taffy. It extends all the way through high school for most kids, well into post high school for many kids. So what is puberty? The narrow way of thinking about puberty is it's the path to sexual maturation, right? So it's going from I cannot participate in making a baby to I could potentially be part of the baby making equation. That's the sort of very narrow definition, but the much broader definition, which helps you understand why it lasts so long, is that the sex hormones that change the way the reproductive organs work so that you can be part of that baby-making equation, those sex hormones rise and fall and rise and fall, and they have impacts not just on the ovaries and the testicles and the penis and the breasts, but also on the brain. And so the moods and friendships and relationships with family members and decision-making and. So you can't really separate out these shifting sex hormones from all the other things that are happening sort of in and around puberty. You got to sort of tackle the whole thing as one and help kids understand that they are not victims of their hormones, but their hormones are driving this bus. And so there are some things to know about it, and there are some ways to take control over it.
Another common misconception people have is that it's one talk. And it's many, 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 many tiny talks, right? It's 30 seconds here. It's 90 seconds there. It's a minute here. It's a minute there. Because as Cara says, there's so many topics to cover, not just physical, but emotional and social. And to do that, you have to walk alongside them as they evolve, as new issues come up in every facet of their lives, and just give them little pieces of information over time. Because as you know, Dana, and you talk about in your work, if we dump a ton of information on kids, they can only assimilate an nth of what we give them. But if we give them little micro pieces of information over time, it's less overwhelming to everyone, and they can actually take on board the information we're sharing with them instead of trying to like drink from a fire hose. And so for those people listening who are like, oh God, okay, I got to have the talk. It's not, it's tons and tons of tiny talks, and it takes the pressure off everybody if we approach it that way.
And I think that kind of feeds into one of these other questions I was thinking about in my work. I talk a lot about the mindset being a really big piece. It's not just, oh, we have to be connected, we have to help our kids understand, but also what we bring to the table, our own perspective, our own shame and guilt and fear, and our own stories about puberty are going to affect how we show up and have that conversation. And so you saying, thinking, oh my gosh, I've got to have this talk. When I asked my community, what is one question you have? That was the big thing, is like, how do I even get started? I'm so afraid to have this talk. And so I want to talk about how to have the talk in a bit, but first, can we address the fear and the shame and the guilt and the worry behind these conversations?
Yeah. So we start every talk, and we basically start the book, with the concept of leaving your baggage at the door. because our own adolescent memories, our own experiences in puberty are literally seared into our brains. And frankly, for a lot of people, there's trauma. And we know that trauma is seared into brains in a way even more profound than just regular adolescent memories. And acknowledging that and thinking about it and finding a trusted adult, your own trusted adult, right? A partner, a friend, a therapist to unpack those memories with before you move into your conversations with kids is really important, because our kids are not the repository for our memories. They should not be carrying our baggage alongside their very, very heavy baggage. And so there's like prep work we have to do on ourselves before we can even begin the conversations with our kids.
That's so helpful. Did you have anything else to add, Cara?
Yeah. You could see my lean in. Vanessa nails it.
I did. I saw you get closer.
You saw me get closer. Like,
it's going to be good. It's going to be so good.
Vanessa nails it perfectly. And this is one of the reasons I partnered with her, was I saw her give a talk about how to leave your baggage at the door. It might have involved Vanessa wearing big pink underpants over her jeans. Don't ask. It was amazing. But like she did this exercise with this group of adults where they literally wrote their baggage on post-it notes, and then they stuck the post-it notes outside of a door and then walked through the door and went into the room. And it was this really amazing exercise, which physically reminded them, this is not about them, right? So it's very hard for us to distinguish our scars of coming of age, which some of which had to do with the physical transformations of puberty and some of which had to do with social shifts or relationships or whatever it was. But it's very hard for us to separate that out from the trauma that we anticipate our kids will feel. But we have to. We have to. That is, and it's a whole lot less exhausting if you do. It's so much more enjoyable to have the conversation when it's not about you relitigating your own childhood.
100%. I just got off of a coaching call right before this, and that we were talking about meltdowns and about her kids getting dysregulated, but it's the same thing. She was walking into the situation so afraid of the outcome and so afraid of the break in the relationship like she had with her mother, that she couldn't walk into a situation without holding on for dear life. And that was then affecting the conversations and the regulation. So it's such an important point that I didn't want to just jump into how to have conversations, because I think this mindset piece is just so powerful.
I love that.
Yeah. So jumping in now that we have left our baggage at the door, pink undies and all.
You've got the visual, right?
Yeah.
Locked
in. I have got the visual.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It is.
They're Hanes granny undies.
And they're amazing.
In a bubblegum pink. And there's nothing that makes a group of kids more willing to talk about puberty than an adult wearing those underwear over their jeans. It's like the perfect leveling exercise.
By the way, she didn't just put them on and take them off. She wore them. She was like,
she wore them proudly. I'm picturing Captain Underpants.
Basically.
Yeah, not dissimilar.
But in pink.
Basically. Yes. Without the Y front.
With clothes on underneath.
Yes.
With a lovely outfit on underneath.
Oh, it was a great outfit.
The pink underwear. Yeah. Yes.
Super cute. Yeah.
I kind of wish you had done your book tour this way.
Vanessa, note to self.
I don't think the 55 schools that we spoke in front of would have been very pleased if I showed up wearing.
Maybe one of them would have.
There were a couple there.
New different for next time.
So, Dana, the funny thing about how to get into the conversation is something we say a lot. We say it in the book. We say it all the time. And it's the phrase, and this is going to infuriate people, it depends. Right? Like, it depends on your personality. It depends on your kid's personality. It depends on who else is in the room with you. It depends. Are you sitting at the dining room table, or are you driving in the car? Are you walking the dog? Right? There's so many variables. And for those of you who are like me, you might just like plow ahead and be like, here we go. Buckle up, everybody. We're going to talk about X. But if you're like Cara, you might approach it very differently. You might come in, you know, a little gentler, a little more diplomatically. You
might would be amused with that description that I'm diplomatic.
If you came in like Kara, not in her family life,
yes,
you would come in
professional. Kara is much more diplomatic.
But I think one of the things that we like to advise people is to start. Like we said earlier, you're not backing up a dump truck and just letting it all slide out onto your kid, because that's not that useful. So start with something easy. Start with like, okay, I know I got to talk to my kid about their body parts and about reproduction, and I'm going to start there. And for some people, the biology is super easy, right? And they're like, yes, I can use the word penis and I can use the word vagina and I feel totally comfortable, and we're going to start with parts and biology. And for other people, just hearing me say those words on this podcast, they probably like either press pause, or they're like hoping no one in the cafe where they're listening is like accidentally could hear it on loudspeaker, right? They're like under the table, and that's also fine. So for some people, talking about the relational part is easier. Talking about love and respect and connection and curiosity, right? Everybody's got a different starting point, and we want people to start where they feel most comfortable and confident, because as they gain more confidence, they will continue to have those many, many small conversations.
Dana here, and guess what? My book, Calm the Chaos, has officially launched. So if you enjoy the podcast and find the stuff we're sharing valuable, I'm 100% sure you're going to love the book. You can get your copy at calmthechaosbook.com. And if you use this link, you'll also get some special bonuses. So once again, the link is calmthechaosbook.com. Thanks. I hope you're enjoying the show.
You talk about something in the book that I really love, because one of my favorite pieces of research that I just like lean into is this idea that you only have to get parenting 75% right. I'm like, I can be a C student. Yes, I can do this. And you talk about doing do-overs and allowing do-overs, and it just removes this urgency to get it right the first time. Can you talk a little bit about the concept of do-overs?
Yeah. I mean, you don't even need to get a C. You can get a full-on F and do it again and then yes, do better. It is the best. So here's what a do-over is. A do-over is trying a conversation, setting a limit, whatever adulting move you want to make, and recognizing, oh, this is not working. Either the conversation is falling flat or turning into a fight, or the limit is being pushed so hard that there's no way to follow through on the consequence and it feels wrong, right, whatever it is. And you're like, oh, I got that so wrong, which, by the way, we all do, right? So what do? You give yourself grace and you say, I'm going to take a do-over. And it might be in the moment, and it might be 5 minutes later, an hour later, a day later, a week later, 10 years later. You just take the do-over when you are ready to take the do-over. Probably 10 years, a little bit late, but that's never too late. And you say to the kid, I got this so wrong. I was trying to do X, but I didn't do it the way I had wanted, or my words were wrong, or I got the limit wrong, or I, you know what? I was sure I was doing it right, but the outcome ended up here, and so I was wrong. I'm going to take a do-over. I'm going to try it again, because I love you and I care about you. And you might solicit their opinion on how you can do it over, or you might, if given the circumstances, you might just need to set a different limit, right? And sometimes it's that you come in too light and you needed to be heavier. You know what? I gave you a phone and I didn't put any restrictions on it, and I feel like I really blew that one. So I'm going to take a do-over and I'm going to put parental controls on, and this is why. Or sometimes it's the reverse order. You cannot go out with your friends ever on a weekend. And suddenly your kid's feeling pretty socially isolated. Take a do-over on that, right? So it requires that you understand the impact of your choices, which requires that you are able to actually keep your eyes open and observe a situation. It also opens up the opportunity for the kids who are watching you do this, make mistakes and take do-overs themselves. We tell them all the time, failure is great. Taking a do-over shows them you can come back from failure. There is a path back from failure.
And anyone who's listening, Dana, who's like, okay, but you know, when it comes to talking about sex or puberty, like I feel like a little bit of vomit in my mouth and I don't know if I can do it. So to those of you feeling that way, I will tell you, a sex educator, an experienced sex educator with two master's degrees, when her own child asked her what sex was, her first response was, it's a special hug. And she's like, oh my God. Oh my God. I have been teaching this for 25 years. And when my own kid asked me the question, I completely avoided giving my kid like a full answer. And so she went back to him and she said, hey buddy, do you remember when I told you it was a special kind of hug? Well, there may be special kinds of hugs as part of it, but actually, and then she went into the conversation. So, you know, if anyone is wondering, okay, but tell us what to say, mm-hmm. you can read the book and there's a million ways in. But one thing we like to do is make sure that it's inclusive. When we talk about sex, there's lots of different kinds of ways people have sex. And our children, when they grow up and are more mature, may choose to have sex in different ways. So you want to make sure when you talk about sex, it's inclusive. So you can say one way people may choose to have sex. And please make sure you include words like respect and love and connection, right? Because we want to make sure that that's part of the narrative we give kids about sex. One way people may choose to have sex is a person may put their penis inside another person's vagina and they have permission to do that and they have consent and maybe they laugh and maybe they talk and it should feel good and they should feel connected with each other. And I always say, at which point your kid will likely do what your kids did to you, Dana, which is promptly leave the room. And that's fine. It doesn't mean you're going to have a kumbaya moment where they're like, oh, mom, thank you so much for sharing that really meaningful and heartfelt definition of sex. I'm going to carry that around with me for the rest of my life. I am so grateful to you. You are the best mom, and I love you so much. It's not going to happen. But what have you done? You've given them information about biology and physiology. You've used correct anatomical language. You've included the embodied human experience, the emotional experience of love and connection, and you've talked about consent. You have covered four really critical topics in all of five sentences with your kid. And yes, they left the room, but they heard what you had to say before they left the room.
100%. You're leaving those breadcrumbs.
Yes.
To kind of come back to.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah. So now that you've breached the topic of talking about a hard conversation like sex, what are some of the hardest topics you find parents struggle to talk about? Or does it depend, like you said earlier, and everyone, you know, some people are more comfortable with one than another, or are there just, these are the most common challenging conversations to have?
Well, you know, it depends is probably the most accurate answer. However, there are some very common ones in the it depends bucket that impact almost all families just in different ways. Body image is probably the biggest one that jumps to mind because the body image ideals that kids are confronted with, they're there from the minute kids are born. It's really, we live in a very visual culture, and unlike conversations about sex, for instance, which start when kids are of a certain age, depending upon if they ride the bus or not. When it comes to body image, it's really something that they're steeped in from day one. And many parents carry their own body image sort of issues or histories or visceral memories of what it felt like to be in a transforming body. Remember, puberty is going to stretch out over a decade. And over this decade, the body is going to completely transform. And these kids are supposed to be A-okay with this whole process. Like, how tall are you going to be? I don't know. How curvy are you going to be? I don't know. What texture is your hair going to be? I don't know. Where on your body is all that hair going to show up or not show up? I don't know. You could say this about 25 different elements of puberty, and there's no predicting any of it, and the kids are expected to keep it together and be okay with all of it. So now you add that to the stew of, by the way, there's a perfect way your body is supposed to look, and it doesn't matter. This is not a girl thing. This is an everyone thing. That's a lot. And so I've rarely met a parent who's like, oh, body image, I got that. I'm not stressing at all about that topic. Every parent I know feels the burden of those conversations and is worried about putting their foot in their mouth or creating an issue by even having the conversation. But lest you forget the theme of everything we do, the conversation is never going to create the issue. Even if you say something wrong, you can take a do-over. So if something comes out in a way that you think, I just did that, I just made a comment about body image that I'm worried is going to scar my kid, take a do-over. I'm worried about the way that comment's going to land, and I want to go back and try it again. But that to me, Vanessa, would you say that's the biggest?
That's a biggie, and masturbation is a biggie. And I was super impressed on our book tour how many people in a room full of 200, 300 adults were willing to say, how do I talk to my kid about masturbation? Which when we were growing up, like, there's no way in hell that question would even have been uttered like one-on-one at the book signing table, let alone in front of the whole group.
Well, it's so interesting because I was actually thinking about how that's a question I get asked all the time is how do I talk to, because we have a lot of kids who have sensory.
Yes.
And they are feeling things out. Yep. And trying to understand their body just, and then you add that onto just everyday puberty things. And this is 100% a topic that I get asked all the time is how do I talk to my kid about touching themselves or masturbating or whatever? Usually they don't use that term. Usually they just say touching themselves.
One thing that people should know is like, it's not just a puberty thing that, as you know, Dana, in your work, that kids use it to self-soothe, that it can be a sensory thing. And like little kids, toddlers masturbate all the way through grade school. And then when they're in puberty and beyond, one of the challenges is people are like, I don't want to shame my kid for touching their body in a way that feels good to them. But I also don't want them like doing it in the family room when we're all watching a movie, for example, or doing it like in school or one of the ways that we talk about it is saying, hey, it's great that there are parts of your body that feel good when you touch them. And it's really important to know what those parts are. But it's also important to know when and where it's okay to do it, because we want to be aware of other people's comfort levels. So it's okay to do it in your bedroom or in your bathroom, but not when you're around other people or in public. And the other thing that comes up a lot is kids finding objects to use to masturbate that are not safe. So you're going to be really interested to hear that we have heard from dozens of people.
Dozens. Yeah.
That they found that their kids were using a Theragun to masturbate.
Okay.
Yeah. And the first time we got the question, we were like, oh, this is really interesting. And then we got the question again and again. And again, so for people who don't know what a Theragun is, it's a handheld kind of vibrating massage tool for large muscles, and it helps with soreness and cramping and injury and all that stuff. They make other products, but that's the product that we were being asked about. I feel like Theragun should sponsor our podcast. And
I don't know what they want.
I know. They'd be like, oh, who knew? It's secondary
use.
It's
a whole new market.
I'm concerned because I wonder if it's safe.
No, it's not safe, Dana.
I don't know the right word to use. So, it's really hard.
So for instance, if you're like, okay, I don't want to shame my kid for masturbating, but also this isn't safe, you can say, hey, that is very sensitive skin, and that's a part of your body that's very sensitive, and you need to take special care of it. And so certain things shouldn't be on or in that part of your body, and you want to be really careful. And so things like a Theragun actually are not safe for you to use. Like, again, affirming that there's nothing wrong with figuring out what feels good in your body, but also keeping your body safe when you do that.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I like the point of, and obviously I know there's going to be people listening to this only because of the parents that I serve and that listen to this, that you might have a child that's on the bell curve of this, right? Yes. And just telling them where it is and isn't acceptable and or not, where you want to be safe and where you want to do this isn't going to be enough. And so just know that we know that exists and that we see you and hear you and know that. And so you can definitely reach out to me or especially to you guys if you've got that kid that no matter what you do, it's still happening in school and in front of everyone else. And because that can be really scary for parents. They don't know where to go.
Yeah. So I have a couple of pieces of advice specifically about that. So one is that it helps for kids to understand why. It helps for them to understand why touching themselves in school, not okay. Touching themselves at home in their bedroom, fine. Right. So coming up with words that will make sense to your kid, very, very helpful. The other thing that I would say is that it's not uncommon for parents to tee up conversations like this by saying to their kids, I'm going to talk to you about blank. Okay? Question mark. And the kids either say no, or they say, why do we have to talk about that? And so it really helps to frame the conversation in a way that your kids will know, I'm not going away. This isn't a one and done deal. And I'm going to keep coming back to this conversation over many years. And I hope when you have questions, you'll come to me. Because what's amazing is that a lot of these reader or listener questions that we got about Theraguns, the parents described the kids coming to them to say, I'm using this. Is it okay? Oh. That it is a wow. It's an incredible thing when your relationship reaches a place where your kid can come to you and ask you a question about safety around masturbation. That's the goal. So when you're playing the long game, you're in this marathon, right? And it's okay if you're starting from a place of they're never going to talk to me about it. The goal is let's just normalize these conversations so that when they have concerns, they will talk to me about it.
Hmm. Yeah. One of the things that I think is probably a hard conversation too, and maybe it's not, but I find that people struggle to have conversations around gender and sexuality. And I'm just curious what you would say to a parent who's listening to this, who might be, we're dealing with our own stuff as well as my son is exploring and learning things, but what would you recommend? And I know you've got a whole chapter on each of those topics in the book, but where would you say someone would start with those conversations?
So we did an episode with a therapist who specializes in working with kids and families, kids who are non-binary or transgender and their families. And we did an episode on the Puberty Podcast just a few weeks ago. And his name is Aiden Olson Kennedy. And he basically provides a foundation in how to think about gender, which can be very confusing for people of our generation. We didn't grow up talking about this. It wasn't sort of a fluid conversation that we were having in the way our kids are having it. And he just provides such a reassuring approach in addition to definitions and frameworks for people to think about it. And the most important thing he says is that, let's say your kid comes to you and says, you know, I want to go by they, them pronouns. Like I'd like you to call me by they, them pronouns. I don't want to be she, her anymore. And he says, your job as a parent, after receiving that information, is simply to say, thank you so much for sharing that with me. I love you so much. And your job as a parent is no different after you've heard that information than it was a half an hour before you heard that information. Your job is still to love that child, to support that child, to listen to that child, to guide that child. It doesn't change anything because you are just there as a constant loving adult. And you are also there to get curious about your kid, not by interrogation, but just to say, like, I want to love and support you. You let me know how I can best do that, how I can be there for you. It doesn't mean peppering them with questions. It doesn't mean forcing them to nail down their identity or who they want to be in 20 years, right? Because we don't do that to kids who don't identify as non-binary or transgender. So why are we doing it to these kids? And basically to just hold space for that kid in a loving way. And it's so funny, Dana, because in some ways that's the hardest thing to do as a parent. Like, we encourage people to do that in other ways in the book and in our work, and you encourage people to do that in your work. And somehow not doing anything and not saying much at all is somehow the hardest thing to do as a parent.
We want to fix, we want to solve, we want to take their pain away. I think that's what I hear a lot, is parents are so afraid that kids are going to get made fun of, or that they're going to, that their heart is, their life is somehow going to be harder if they choose in quotes a path that is not the norm. And so I think that's where that comes. That's my own belief of where I think a lot of that comes from, is just that we want to protect so much. So doing nothing feels like we're sitting idly by.
And they're projecting so much about, they're reflecting on what it might be like to be in this conversation or in this place as the kid from decades ago, which was a different time where there were different ideas, where there were different language, there were different media, there were different ways in which people presented themselves. There were different styles. There were different downward pressures, there were different consequences, right? And not to say that we're in like this perfect time right now where all those things are better, but it was just all different and it's very hard. I think this goes back to the way we started the conversation with leaving your baggage, which is, it's very hard to raise kids or love kids when your head is in the past. It's very hard because the world has changed. None of us grew up with social media. Like, the world has changed. And yet that's what we know. That's where our brains go. Those are our visceral memories. And so that's what we're all stuck with. We're stuck with trying to sort through how we lived and experienced our own coming of age and how we can use those very formative experiences and memories to help protect our kids, strengthen our kids, keep our kids safe. And some of it we can use, but some of it lives in a time that is no longer relevant. It's just, it's a memory bank. And it's, this is why it's complicated and confusing. And for anyone who feels overwhelmed by it, come sit by us. We feel overwhelmed by it every single day, but it doesn't mean it's not rewarding and amazing and joyful and silly and sometimes really sad and really hard to be in conversation with your kids.
Not as hard of a conversation or a topic, but I know an important question that a lot of people were asking is, what are the signs that people, especially since it does start earlier, what are some of the signs that puberty is starting or has already started that parents could be watching for?
So the earliest physical shift that happens in puberty is usually breast budding for girls. So that's when the nipples go from being completely flat on the chest to having what look like little lumps underneath, sometimes one, sometimes both. Eventually it'll be both, but often it's just one at first. And for boys, it's testicular growth. So the testicles start to get bigger because that's the testosterone machinery. But we love Louise Greenspan, who's a pediatric endocrinologist, hormone doctor, who likes to say, really, the first sign of puberty is a slamming door, because those same sex hormones that make your boobs grow and your testicles grow, depending upon what organs you have in there, those same hormones go into your brain and make your mood swing.
That's so funny, because that was the final question I had about understanding puberty. I could talk to you guys all day long, but people are going to go get the book. They're going to dive into your work. And so you get to answer those questions. But the final one that was coming up a lot in our community, probably because we deal with a lot of outbursts and tantrums and meltdowns and understanding neurodiversity, was the effect of puberty on the ability to handle stress, mood, and those outbursts that they might be having, which you just talked about. Can you talk just a little bit, for the people who love the science, can you talk a little bit about what's happening there?
It's amazing, because if you think about puberty, people think about the outward signs, right? The physical signs. But now we're talking about the mood swings. And the mood swings are caused by the sex hormones circulating in the brain and the body. And the sex hormones, testosterone, estrogen, progesterone, don't just rise gently over the course of the decade of puberty. They are like a roller coaster with no seatbelt, right? They are like the craziest Six Flags roller coaster you can think of, and then take away the safety bar. And for kids who are already in experiencing neurodiversity, and that's, as you well know, Dana, a very wide-ranging category and can mean lots of different things, but it does mean, for some kids, emotional volatility, the hormones and the mood swings can exacerbate that. Now, having said that, a parent who is already well-versed in addressing their kids' mood swings, who understands that those outbursts and those mood swings are not volitional, that they don't have a bad child, that the kid is not quote unquote evil or manipulative or out to get them, but is rather a child who is managing their own physiology and the chemistry of their bodies, and their brain is reacting to that reality, that parent is better armed than so many other parents who have not developed the tools to manage outbursts, to handle tantrums, right? In some ways, your community is the most qualified to handle the mood swings of puberty, because they understand co-regulation. They understand the importance of breathing. They understand the value of empathy and how you cannot go hot to hot. You can't fight fire with fire. You have to help a kid calm down. Those are all the tools that people need to manage mood swings. And so it's actually a great skill that's already been built for folks, and they're really qualified to handle the mood swings, which, I mean, is anyone really good at handling mood swings? No. Are we really good at handling our own mood swings? No. But at least we have more practice, and parents who have been parenting through this for maybe a decade already are actually really good at recognizing how to handle this new stage of mood swings.
Mm-hmm. I love that. As we wrap up, I like to ask every guest that comes on the same question. And it is, if you only had 1 or 2 minutes and you're sitting in front of a parent who is facing puberty and the scary conversations, and I know you do this every day in your work, what would you want them to walk away with, just 1 or 2 minutes? And each of you, I'd love to hear from both of you.
It's like the riddle about, if you only have one wish, when you rub the genie bottle and the genie comes out, what would you wish for? I'd wish for endless wishes. That's my, in my 1 minute, I would say, I'm here and we're going to keep talking about all this stuff. And my goal, as someone who loves you and whose job it is to keep you safe and healthy, is to ask you the questions openly and regularly, and eventually to be the one who's on the receiving end of your questions. And I'll always answer them honestly.
Mm, love that.
My wish for myself, I put myself in this category along with everyone else, is to continue to get better and better at listening more and talking less. It's so hard, as we talked about, that the desire to fix and solve and lecture. But we hear from kids over and over again, I just want my parents to listen and to validate me and to be there for me. And could they please stop talking?
Mm. Love that so much. I love it. Okay. Thank you guys so much for coming on, for sharing your time. I know you are busy ladies and have a lot going on. Where can people find out more about you and follow your work?
So first of all, thank you for having us. We love and admire you and are so grateful to be welcomed into your community. So thank you for that. People can find us at lessawkward.com because everything we do makes puberty less awkward. And on social media, they can find us at Spilling the Puberty, P-U-B-E-R-T-E-A, because we spilled the tea, but it's puberty, on TikTok and on Instagram. And if you have topics that we touched on and you've read the book, but you want more, you can listen to the Puberty Podcast, where we could do deep dives. You can listen to our episode with Dana if you haven't yet. And we have tons and tons of episodes with experts and also topics that we talk about just the two of us.
Thank you guys so much for coming. It has been absolutely amazing having you. And I'll put all the links to the resources you mentioned in the show notes. And if you guys are listening to this and anything has resonated with you, as I always say, please message me, message Cara or Vanessa, and just let us know what resonated with you, what really stood out and that you're going to take with you. You don't have to, like that dump truck, you don't have to take all the information that was talked about today forward with you. Just take that one little soundbite that you can use for the next week, the next month, and let us know what that was so that we can follow along and be there to support you. So I want to remind you that you're exactly the parent that your kid needs, even if it feels a little awkward, a little strange. The good news is you are definitely not alone navigating this journey. So I will talk to you on next week's podcast. Bye, guys.
Oh, and before I go, one quick note for all of you who are enjoying the podcast. My new book is officially live, and I know you're going to love it. So just a quick reminder, you can go get your copy at calmthechaosbook.com. And if you do, you'll get some cool bonuses as well. Once again, get your copy at calmthechaosbook.com, and I'll see you next week.